Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Terminal fans, Sign Guy and QT with you on another Sunday afternoon. A couple of show notes for you. Later today, KDW running in Jeffersonville, Indiana at the arena. In our neck of the woods, the PNPW show scheduled for Astoria, Oregon has been canceled due to an emergency with the promoter. So that show postponed. But NWA Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland, Oregon, later today, I will be there. It is a benefit show to help with the bills for the injured Darkness. So definitely get out there and support that show. Help us raise some funds for a fallen wrestler. Without further ado, I would like to welcome to the show our guest today, Mr. Fred Avery. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it very much.
Well, since today is your first day with us, we always ask the first-time guests, how did you get started in professional wrestling?
Well, you know, it's going to be the kind of that cliche talking stuff where you say that, oh, I was a fan as a kid and this, that, and the other. And that's the truth, though. As a kid, I grew up watching wrestling back in the good old Georgia Championship wrestling days, Tommy Rich, Buzz Sawyer, Wrestling Number 2, and that crowd. And one day I was living in Valdosta, Georgia, and I was down there, and I hadn't been training yet. I'd been trying to find somebody to train me. I was about 20 years old and 21 years old. And I was going to a local studio down there, and I was taking pictures of all the wrestlers. And one of the guys came up and asked me if I would take some pictures for them to sell. You know, it was a small independent show, but they had their TV going. And the guy's name, they wrestled as a tag team called the Smurfs. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll take pictures if you can hook me up with somebody that will train me. And it just so happened that there was a student at Valdosta State College that was also wrestling at that time, Rick Allen, who went by the name of Sandy Beach, Sunny Beach, depending on where he was. And he actually started my training, and that's just got the ball rolling from there.
I mean, talk about guys like Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich that were favorites of yours before you got into the business. When you're in a locker room and you look over and there's Tommy Rich and there's Buzz Sawyer and people that you've watched for years, what's going through your mind the first time that happens to you?
You live in the childhood dream. It was a wonderful thing. One of my favorite wrestlers as a kid was Ox Baker. And one of the stories that I like to tell about Ox is when I was probably 13, 14 years old, I was at a wrestling match in Warner Robins, Georgia, where I was raised. And he was wrestling there for Ann Gunkel, an all-star championship wrestler at that time, or All-Southern, I think it was. And I went up to him with his poster, you know, as they used to poster the towns. And I asked Ox for his autograph, and Ox took my poster, ripped it up, threw it at me, took my pencil, bit it in half, spit it back at me and all. And about 15, 20 years later, here I am sitting in the locker room as a tag team partner with Ox Baker. And I told him this story, and he just laughed and gave me a stack of autographed pictures for me. So, you know, like I said, it's just living the childhood dream. Anytime you can step in a locker room and you look around, you see guys that you watched growing up, it's a wonderful feeling.
Ox Baker also was the favorite wrestler of my dad. He enjoyed Ox Baker. You teamed up with Ox later in his career. Was he different from what you had envisioned in your mind before you actually got into the business and worked with them? Was there a difference between what you envisioned going into it and what it actually was like?
Well, yeah, I think because, you know, back then kayfabe was real big, and they kept everything a mystery, so you didn't know. And you thought that Ox was the meanest SOB that was on the planet. And when I actually got to meet him and talk with him and sit down and get to know him a little bit, he was really a super nice guy. So it was definitely a little different. But he did teach me a lot about how to be mean in the ring and how to be aggressive without hurting folks. So it was a wonderful learning experience. Like I said, he was a great guy.
Now, you, of course, worked for the larger companies in the heydays when TBS was huge for wrestling and the USA Network, of course, and syndication was still really strong. What was it like wrestling on television as opposed to wrestling in front of just the live crowd? Did you have yourself any differences in how you approach the matches, television versus live show, or was it all pretty much the same for you?
Well, when I started out, because I started out on the independent scene, and you work in front of 200 to 300, 400 people if you're lucky, and I was always placed in the main events just mainly because of my size. I'd like to think I had good talent, but, you know, I was 6'3", 300-plus pounds, could move pretty good. And so, you know, I was always in the main event on the independent scenes. And when I went to WCW, and that's really the only major organization, I never got an opportunity to work for WWE. But with WCW, you know, they used it as an enhancement talent, a job guy, whatever you'd like to call it. And I originally went in there with the understanding, or at least what I thought was an understanding, that my job was to make sure that the other guys looked good and all, and not really to put myself over. But as time went by, I figured out, you know, I can put myself over and still make them look good. So my philosophy kind of changed over the, yeah, I was up there for 5 years. And so, you know, as time changes, my philosophy changed that I need to get myself over because it would help me with independent bookings too. So there was a time when I was working 3-4 nights a week doing WCW and independent bookings. And so, and that's the way we needed to keep it. So, yeah, I think, working live crowds, you are able to go out and showcase yourself a little bit more instead of the 3.5 to 4 minutes they give you on TV.
Now, of course, being on television, you're going to get seen by a larger number of people than a standard independent that's wrestling in front of just live crowds without the television exposure. Did you find that you personally started getting more and more notice in your daily routine and your everyday life from being on television?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had moved around a little bit. I was living in Valdosta, Georgia, like I said, at that one time, and people would recognize you when you went to the mall, went to the grocery store. And so, you know, you did get noticed more. I've always worked a full-time job as in either in a mental health field, or, which is what I was doing then, or as I'm a school teacher now. And so, you know, you definitely got noticed by the kids. And when you got on TV, people would say, oh, wait a second, you know, that's you, isn't it? And even to this day, as a school teacher, the kids are always pulling up my old videos on YouTube and wanting to show them in the middle of class. So you do get recognized a lot more. And it was fun.
How often did you get advice from fans on what to do in the ring when you would be noticed just in your everyday life?
I think every time they talk to you, they want to give you advice. Everybody's a good backseat driver, you know, a Sunday, or what is it, a Monday morning armchair quarterback, or whatever they call that. So I think everybody wants to try to give you advice on how to win, what to do, why do you do this instead of that. And normally, you know, I took it with a grain of salt and thanked them and, you know, just said, hey, keep coming out and watching, and I'll keep taking your money. I didn't actually say it like that, but that was in the back of my head, you know. So you got to appreciate the fans because they're the ones that are paying the bills for you. So you listen to them and you you take what they have to say sometimes. And some of it actually was pretty good information. So, you know, if I throw a punch a little bit better, if I do this a little bit better. So, you know, some of it was good stuff.
Now, when you were with WCW, they very rarely ran women's wrestling. It has picked up quite a bit in the last 10 years. The level of competition has increased quite a bit. It's taken a lot more seriously by fans for the most part. They're actually going a main event at pay-per-view for the first time in WWE with a women's match later today. When you were with WCW in that era, did you think much about women's wrestling as far as seeing it as something that could potentially be viable as a major attraction that fans would want to see?
Well, that's the big thing is that, you know, if you go back and look, WCW rarely had women's wrestling on. They had Medusa on there for a little while. They had, you know, Sherry was on there, Sensational Sherry, Sister Sherry. But most of the time, they were used as valets. They really weren't in-the-ring workers that much. I always thought that, you know, an athlete's an athlete. And that's the great thing about it now. When you've got Ashley and some of these girls or ladies that are wrestling now, you're looking at tremendous athletes. So it's, you know, I don't care if they're male or female. If they can go, they can go. WCW had no intentions in my mind of ever really putting a female over in any kind of match. It was a gimmick match to them. Girls and midgets were gimmick matches back then. And so that's sort of little people, dwarfs. You know, it was all a gimmick, and it really didn't have a mainstay place in WCW or what Moolah had had in WWE. She had a good run up there, but it was still a gimmick match. You know, it was like a special feature here in the ladies. So it's nice to see them get their push now.
On the independent level, did you see a lot more of women's wrestling, and did you see a difference as far as how women's wrestling was treated either by the fans or by the promoters or even a combination?
Definitely in the South. I can't think of a card that I worked on for a while that didn't have a ladies match on it. And there were actually some angles being built with some of the ladies that were going on the cards. You know, you go back to Continental Championship Wrestling where the Dirty White Boy was there and he had his girl, the Dirty White Girl. And they were running an angle with, that time, Bambi, which was a Southern draw for us. She was raised here in Georgia and did a great job there and went over to Continental with the Armstrongs and the Fullers. And then in Tennessee, you know, Lawler always had the ladies working for him. And so the independents, you know, and at that time you can classify those guys almost as independents, even though it was the end of the old territories. They weren't the major league anymore. And on the independent shows that I worked around Georgia, we definitely always had women on those shows. And I think the promoters saw them not so much as eye candy or, you know, I can make a money of because the guys want to watch the girls get beat up, but because for the most part, they were pretty good athletes.
Now, in the last 15 to 20 years with the internet and the dirt sheets becoming fairly prolific, a lot of talk is made from fans and from people that follow the industry about morale in the different companies at different points in time. When you were with WCW, was there ever an issue with the morale of the locker room when it came to how they felt with the direction of the company or maybe how they felt with the direction of the business as a whole?
Well, I was there when Shaw came in, and we all know how the Pizza Hut man did there. You know, and you listen to some other wrestlers that are a little bit more knowledgeable about this than I am, according, you know, Ric Flair and so forth, that cannot stand the man. He didn't know how to run a wrestling business. I was there when Bill Watts came in. I personally liked Bill Watts. Everybody knew where you stood with Bill Watts. He hated everybody equally, as, you know, I like to say. He never really showed favoritism that I saw to anybody, including us, as, you know, enhancement talent. And then I was there when Flair and the booking committee took over. I was there when Sullivan was there. I probably went through about 8 to 10 bookers in a 5-year span, and the morale was up and down all the time because sometimes, and this was before the Monday Night Wars, and so, you know, there were still times when it was just chaos and you didn't know what was going on from day to day there. But at the same time, it was coming from the independent scene. It was a big step up to organization and what is going on. Was morale down? It depends on who you talk to. You know, I always just went in there. I did my job. I got my money and I left. Some of the older guys, some of the guys that were more established that were having to, you know, really depend on WCW for their living, I'm sure that they thought the morale was down at times. But it, to me, growing up watching Georgia Championship Wrestling and everything, I was just living in hog heaven. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world to just be a part of the organization.
Now, we have a game that we like to play on Turnbuckle Turmoil called Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you have likely come across in your career. The first word or two that pops into your head to describe them would be the answer. Are you prepared for a round of word association?
Yeah, let's go for it. This should be fun.
All right. First name, Eddie Gilbert.
Eddie Gilbert was a genius in the wrestling business. Great guy. Loved working him.
Teddy Long.
Teddy Long's a funny little man, and Teddy was very good at what he did when he needed to do it.
Ox Baker.
Fabulous. One of my idols.
Haku.
Never had the opportunity to meet Haku.
Kevin Sullivan.
If it isn't a work, Kevin Sullivan's crazy as hell. I don't know if it's a work or not. Never could figure him out.
Brian Pillman.
Do I really have to answer this one? Because I didn't like the guy personally. So I guess I answered it.
All right. Missy Hyatt.
Very interesting person. Very interesting. Very intelligent, very pretty. Depends on who you talk to is how she got ahead in the business.
Mike Rotundo.
Mike Rotundo, very quiet. Never had a lot of interactions with him, but I liked him.
Lee Scott.
Lee Scott. That name rings a bell, but I can't put a name with him. I work some independent shows with Lee. Lee's a good guy. Yeah.
Rhubarb Jones.
Rhubarb Jones, the DJ that made it to the ring announcing. I worked with Rhubarb before he even went to WCW. He was doing stuff with Joe Pedicino and actually, I think it was Jody Hamilton with Deep South. Was it Deep South? I think it was Deep South Wrestling that he was announcing for before he went to WCW. Rhubarb's a good guy.
And the final name, Jake Roberts.
Jake the Snake. Interesting story. I was sitting in the locker room one time, and Jake just came up and started talking to me. Pretty much told me his whole life history. At that time, he wasn't in as deep into the demons drug scene that he had gotten or that he, you know, ended up being into. But very interesting person, very interesting, and learned a lot from him in just a 30-minute conversation that, for some reason, he decided to come have with me.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by. I know he has some questions also, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
All right. Well, hello, Miss Ambassador Avery. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. You can just call me Fred.
Oh, okay, Fred. Well, Fred, I'd like to expand on Sun Guy's word association with two wrestlers. How about King Kong Bundy?
Never had a chance to meet King Kong Bundy, but, you know, watching him on TV, seeing his character and all, I liked it. I liked him. You know, very, very athletic, very talented man to be as big as he was or is.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay, how about Jimmy Snuka?
Jimmy Snuka did an independent show or two with Snuka. Snuka's a neat guy. One of those characters that, you know, once you meet him, you know he's always around. He's very interesting, unfortunately, not in good health right now from what I understand. But great guy when I met him. Enjoyed the company.
Wow, okay. All right. How about the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart?
Jimmy Hart, interesting, another interesting character. Seems to always be at the right place at the right time in order to get himself over.
Okay, all right. That concludes my word association. Okay. Now,
all right.
Now, Fred, have you been in contact with Sandy Beach or Sunny Beach lately, or when was the last time?
Through Facebook, we talk on probably a weekly basis, monthly basis. You know, I haven't personally seen Sandy, Sunny, gosh, in a few years now, probably more like 10 to 15 years.
Wow, all right, 10 to 15, okay.
Yeah.
Now,
go ahead.
Oh, no, please finish, that's fine.
Well, I knew that he got married, he moved up to New York, and that's where he lives now, is in the New York area, and he runs a security company up there. And now that I live in Florida, which is actually his home stomping town, I live right outside of Jacksonville, and he's from Jacksonville originally. So I hope one day when he comes down here to visit, we're going to hook back up.
Oh, wow, Jacksonville, that's a city of a large Navy base.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Wow, yeah. Boy, I had quite a few ports of call there myself. Yes.
Oh, okay. It's a beautiful town. I live on Amelia Island, though, so I'm about 20 miles from Jacksonville.
Oh, very nice. Okay. All right. Do you do any fishing there?
You know, I'm not a fisherman. It's funny. Kids, I'm a school teacher now, and the kids ask me all the time, you know, do you hunt, do you fish? And I don't do either one of those things. I still try to train and stay in shape. I actually had my last wrestling match, it was my so-called retirement match, about a year ago at the high school that I teach at now. And I still like to every now and then go and get in the ring and roll around and try to help some, you know, younger kids learn the sport. But I'm a pretty boring guy as far as outside activities.
Oh, okay. Well, you mentioned earlier in the show that Ox Baker bit your pencil in half. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners how big Ox Baker is?
Well, as a kid, I thought Ox Baker was about 6'9", 350. That's how big I thought he was as a kid. When I met him, he was actually about 6'3", 6'4", about 300 pounds. When I met him, actually got to wrestle with him, he had really bad arthritis in his knee, so he couldn't even stand up straight by that time. He had to be mid-50s, I would guess, when I got the opportunity to tag team with him. But I think in his prime, Ox was about 6'6", 320, 325, which for that era and that generation was a huge wrestler.
Wow, that is big. Yes, boy, 6'6", 325, woo, okay.
Well, you know, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Escape from New York City. Ox has with Kurt Russell, Ox has a major role. Well, I don't know if it'd be a major role, but he has a role in that movie where he actually gets in the ring with Kurt Russell and they're wrestling around. And at the end of it, Ox gets killed with a baseball bat with nails to the back of the head.
That's Escape from New York City?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. You ever get the classic? It's a cult classic, anyways. But he's in that one. So he actually. I don't know if you've ever seen the clip where he's on, is it Wheel of Fortune? No, not Wheel of Fortune, the one with Bob Barker. Price is Right. The Price is Right. YouTube that one day. That's funny.
Okay.
On The Price is Right. YouTube it one day. You'll get a kick out of it.
Wow. Well, wasn't Rowdy Piper in a movie called They Live?
Yes, yes. Yeah, another one of those cult classics where he, his famous scene was, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yes. Now, which one would you rather watch, They Live or Escape from New York City?
Oh, being an Hawks fan, it had to be Escape from New York City. But I will say that They Live had one of the best fight scenes in it that was ever on, you know, in the movies at that time. Roddy, and I don't know the co-star's name at the time, a black gentleman, but they put on one heck of a fight on the movie screen.
Yes, I'm going to have to rewatch that movie. Yes. All right, well, Fred, when you started to have people recognize you in Valdosta, Georgia, did they say you could go ahead of them while you were in long lines at 7-Eleven or the DMV?
No, I never had that. I did have an old lady come up to me at Walmart, though, and start cussing me out for beating up one of her favorite wrestlers. And I had to, like, you know, walk away. It was like she was just ranting and raving at me in the middle of Walmart because I beat up one of her favorite wrestlers.
Oh, so did they have to call security?
No, I walked away. You know, being a heel, I'd been a heel almost my entire career. So you kind of get, you know, people don't particularly like you much until they get to know you. And that's just the way it was. And so a lot of times when you go out in public, you just kind of like smile and just say, yes, have a great day, and keep walking.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
Definitely in the South, you know, wrestling was still very believable. And there was a large population in the South that really believed wrestling was real. And there still is. I mean, I've still got fans now that swear up and down that everything they see is totally up and up.
Oh,
and you, yeah, I mean, you could argue with them, oh, no, there's stuff that is, you know, choreographed, there's stuff that's set up, you know, it's predetermined. No, it's not. Okay, you know, and it's just like the fans that you try to tell that wrestling is not, quote, unquote, fake, that, you know, oh, yeah, it is. And so, you know, you just kind of learn to smile and say, yes, you're right, and we'll go about your business.
Okay, all right. Well, Mr. Avery, a lot of our interviewees have had a background of wrestling in high school. Did you yourself wrestle in high school, or did you throw the shot in track and field?
I actually played football and wrestled in high school. I think I hold the distinction of being one of the only high school wrestlers from Warner Robins High to actually get disqualified. I pile-drived a guy in one of my matches one time. Thought it would be fun to do.
Oh,
it was
man.
A good-looking pile driver for a junior in high school. So I'm actually a wrestling coach now, and so I have to tell my kids all the time, you can't do this and you can't do that. But, yeah, I wrestled in high school. I was not a great wrestler as far as that goes, but I was okay. I held my own. Been in the theatrical area, so I like pro wrestling a lot more.
Okay. Have any of your junior high wrestling teams won the district championships? And what has been your longest winning streak?
As far as my high school wrestling team?
Yes. No, I mean the junior high team that you coach.
No, I coach high school.
Oh, high school.
So,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've been at this high school for now 3 years coaching it. I've been lucky enough to, or fortunate enough to take a couple guys to the state, placed 1/3 in the state, which is the highest that anybody in this county's ever placed. Took the first freshman and sophomore to the state, back-to-back years as a freshman and then as a sophomore to state. So I've been very fortunate. I've had a good run. As far as like winning streaks, high school wrestling is so hit and miss. We've got a couple really dominant teams in this area, and it's very hard to really build any great momentum. It's hard to get the kids to understand that they have to wear singlets. They don't like the onesies, as they call it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of strange, because out here in the Northwest, they demand the singlets and onesies.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's how they do it down here, too. And the kids are like, I'm not wearing that. You know. And actually, there was a vote last year to see if they could get away from them and to go to, like, compression shirts and the MMA-type style boxing pants, shorts. So they might go to that in this area in the next couple years.
Oh.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to, you know, meet Cody Rhodes back when he was in high school. One of the guys that I trained, Ray Lloyd Glacier, was actually teaching at the high school where Cody went, and we both worked for Turnbuckle with Dusty for a while, and I had that great opportunity of meeting Cody back when he was the two-time state champion in Georgia. So,
weight class was Cody Rhodes wrestling in high school?
189, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. He was 189, but hey, I don't think he weighed 89 at the time. I think he was a light 89.
Okay.
And he's probably close to that now, looking at him. I don't think he's much over 200 right now, looking at the pictures that I've seen of him lately.
Yeah, really, really good at maintaining that weight, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He definitely, when he left WWE, he got serious again in the weight room. Not that he hadn't been, but I think he knew that he wasn't going to be able to cover up everything with the Stardust outfit anymore. And so he wanted to get back to looking good with the abs and stuff. So, yeah, I think Cody weighing about 215 right now, looking at the pictures. But he was 189. He was two-time state champion in Georgia.
Nice.
Actually had football offers and quit playing football just to concentrate on wrestling.
I think he made the right move. Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Very talented young man.
Well, Mr. Avery, I might be mistaken, but wasn't Haystack Calhoun from Valdosta, Georgia?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I think they brought him, or they billed him from, like, Arkansas, but, which doesn't mean anything. Cause I was billed from Idaho for years, and I've never been to Idaho. But I'm not sure, to be honest with you, if Haystack was or not.
Oh, okay, well, I'll have to do a Google search on that and get back to you with that bit of information.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Avery, did you ever have a chance to meet Jesse the Body Ventura, who later in his career at one point stated that he wanted to be known as Jesse the Mind?
Jesse came in right at the end of my tenure with WCW. Great guy. I did get the chance to meet him, talk to him for a little bit. Very, very outspoken man, and even to this day, I love listening to what he's got to say. And I kind of wish that Donald Trump would have picked him for vice president candidate. It would have made for an interesting run.
Yes, I very much appreciate the time that Donald Trump did get in the ring with Vince McMahon and sign that contract. That was great.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine Trump and McMahon as running mates?
Oh, that'd be great. Yes. that'd be great. I'd love to see, like, Vince McMahon asking Hillary Clinton a question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or could you imagine how many buses they would throw Vince under for sexual misconduct?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Imagine some of the stuff that he's done in the ring in public before.
Well, I'd love to see a match Vince McMahon against Bill Clinton.
I don't think that would be much of a match. I guess it depends on what they're doing.
Yes. Well, Mr. Avery, you didn't have the chance to wrestle in TNA. What did you think about the tag team Beer Money?
You know, I like that. I like that tag team a lot. It was a good. It's very similar to the one that they've got now, the Revival. It was a good throwback tag team. Bobby Roode and what's the other guy's name? I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Bobby Roode and now I can't think of them.
Is it
James Storm?
James Storm. I enjoyed the tag team. I enjoyed the work that the work that they put out, and I always liked the old TNA product. So I'm watching some of it now for the first time with Matt Hardy and his new character. That's very interesting, and it caught my eye. You know, I listened to a podcast where Matt Hardy was on it, and I found him to be quite interesting. And I was never a big Hardy fan, I've never been a high-flying type wrestler that liked a lot of the high-flying stuff that the Hardys did. But, I like that new gimmick that they've got going on right now. It's like I said, interesting, and it seems to be bringing some people back to TNA, so hopefully it'll work for them.
Yes. Well, Mr. Avery, I saw your YouTube match against Jungle Jim Steele. That took place on February 12, 1994, on a WCW event, and the first thing that struck me was how Jungle Jim could have passed as a hybrid clone of Jimmy Snuka, the Ultimate Warrior, and the Tonga Kid. My question is, match commentator Bobby the Brain Heenan said that Jungle Jim was from the jungle, but I have the feeling that he was from a Polynesian island, perhaps Borneo, Bora Bora, or maybe New Caledonia. Did you ever find out where he was from, Jungle Jim?
Actually, I think he was from somewhere in Georgia or Alabama, to be honest with you. It's funny. The reason why I laughed about that match was that I had wrestled Jim 2 weeks earlier at an independent show and had just beat the stink out of him. I was like the Peach State heavyweight champion at the time for a show that Ben Masters was running in Cordial, Georgia, which was a hotbed of wrestling at that time period in the South. And they had brought Jungle Jim Steele in. This is right before he signed with WCW. And to challenge me, I was the heel champion. And I had just beaten the stink out of him. And then 2 weeks later, so here I was having to put him over on national TV because he had just signed a contract with him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of like, damn, I'm doing this again. Because I had done the same thing with Brian Armstrong.
Okay.
The Road Dog. Brian and I were running an angle in the Georgia independent scene. And then all of a sudden he shows up as the Road Dog, and so it was kind of an interesting time for me there.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I'm not sure where Jungle Jim was from.
Okay, Jungle Jim, okay. I also heard Bobby Heenan say, chimpanzees, apes, lions, tigers, and zebras all were from the jungle. Now, I give Heenan credit for the chimpanzees and tigers, and quite a bit of credit for the Alps, for the apes, although they prefer mountain jungle settings in subtropical Africa. They are up there in elevation like from 1,000 foot to 3,000 foot, but I don't give credit to Heenan when he says lions and zebras. They live on the African veldt grasslands and by rocky outcrop waterholes. My question is, were you a big fan of the movie Ghost in the Darkness, starring Michael Douglas, that was about two man-eating lions of Savo, Africa? That's my question.
That's a long way to get into a question. I saw the movie. I wouldn't see it again.
Oh, okay.
So how's that for it was okay the first time I saw it. I don't think I've ever... I have no desire to ever see it again. I thought it was an okay movie.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I also saw your YouTube video, 11-11-89, Steiners versus William Bell and Fred Avery. When Rick and Scott Steiner came out, their entrance music was Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses, who were a band for only 2 years when the song came out. My question is, before the match, did you and William discuss entrance music possibilities?
In those day and age, we didn't get it. We were just enhancement guys. We just got to show up in the ring. I don't know what music I would have used in those days. I'm trying to think what I used on the independent scene then, and it varied from town to town, really, so... No, I don't think William Bell and I discussed much except for who was not going to try to take Steiner line.
Oh, well, I had wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington that told me that you were thinking of such 1989 hits as Every rose has its thorns by Poison, The Look by Roxette, or My Prerogative by Bobby Brown. Is that true?
I like Every Rose Has Its Thorn. I can handle that one.
Oh, okay. All right.
Actually, you know, I wrestled for a couple of years as a tag team called Pretty Young Things. We stole the gimmick from Coco Beware and Over by Austin. We were two big, fat, ugly white guys, and we were the Pretty Young Things, and we were pretty successful in Georgia with that gimmick, and we used that song, PYT. So that was one of the songs that we used.
Oh, okay. Well, now, your wrestling uniform and physical stature remind me right away of Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Have you had a lot of people say this to you, and indeed, have you met Jim the Anvil in person?
I did have a lot of people tell me that, especially during that time period, because, you know, the Hart Foundation was pretty big up in WWE at that time period. And I had the opportunity to meet him on an independent show a few years after that. So, yeah, I've met Jim. He's a pretty nice guy.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Fred, it's been claimed that the Freebirds, who were comprised of Michael P.S. Hayes, Buddy Roberts, Terry Gordy, Jimmy Garvin, and Bad Street, were the first wrestlers to use entrance music for their ring introductions, although Gorgeous George used Pomp and Circumcision before the, I mean, Circumstance.
Not Circumcision.
Oh, yeah.
He might have been circumcised. I don't know that about Gorgeous George.
Oh, okay. My mistake, yes. They would be Pomp and Circumcision. And they were before the Gorgeous George were, of course, before the Freebirds to use the Freebirds were the first to use rock. In fact, their name was inspired by the Lynyrd Skynyrd song Freebird until Bad Street USA, which was sung, composed, and co-written by Michael Hayes, replaced it in 84. My question is, were you a big fan of the song Bad Street USA?
It's a good song. Michael has a rare singing talent. You've heard some of his other stuff. I mean, you know, I think he did the Bad Street over in Dallas when he was over in Texas then. It wasn't a bad song. I personally am a fan of Freebird a lot more than that. But, you know, I could live with the Bad Street song if I had to. You know, being a Southern-born, Southern-bred kind of kid, you know, Freebird was definitely a battle cry for us. And I still remember the very first match that the Freebirds had in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Omni. They brought them in a special tag team match. It was the original Assassins. Well, I say original. It was Jody Hamilton, and I believe it was one of the Moondogs. What's his name? He also went as Demolition for a short period. But they were tag teaming up against Tim Woods, Wrestling 1 and Wrestling 2, and one of the first Tornado tag team matches for the Georgia National Tag Team titles. And the Freebirds, they brought them in out of Pensacola at that time to win the titles. Now, that's some history right there.
Yeah, it is.
And that's back when Bam Bam and Buddy Jack were, you know. And it was funny because as a kid growing up, watching that team, and in my mind, I was like, you know, I didn't like Buddy Jack Roberts. He wasn't any good. Terry Gordy was mean as hell. He was a big guy. He could go. I liked Terry. Michael was a good talker. Michael and Terry were the team. When I got into the business and I actually started watching wrestling, I realized that Buddy Roberts was the glue that held that team together. He was the actual wrestler in the group. Michael's a great guy, but Michael's not the best wrestling talent. Can talk, great mind, but actually in the ring work, if you watch Michael's in the ring work, and he'll admit to this, not one of the greatest in the ring technicians, but a great talker.
And
great mind for the business. Bam Bam Gordy was a fantastic, fantastic big man. One of the greatest wrestlers. Loved it. I had a tag match with him and Dr. Death Steve Williams one time. Great match. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how if you had ever worked with Dr. Death, Steve Williams. Yes.
Worked a couple times against Steve Williams, once in a tag match with him and Gordy, and then in a singles match. Actually, maybe three times because I had a match with the Midnight Express and Steve Williams in a six-man tag match. Steve was a horse. Like I said, I was 320 probably, you know, give or take a hamburger or two. And he picked me up like a rag doll and gave me that Oklahoma Stampede and just was amazing. How strong
Ooh,
he was.
Ooh, the Oklahoma Stampede, huh? Ooh.
Yeah. Wasn't a bad wow. move. He protected you pretty well.
Wow. When Mr. Avery, the chorus in Bad Street USA goes, Bad Street Atlanta GA, baddest street in the whole USA, bad street, nasty and hot, the further down the block you went, the badder it got. My question is, at any time did Mr. Hayes approach you and invite you to sing the chorus on their 1985 tour of Texas, Louisiana, and Georgia that was co-sponsored by Dr. Scholl's Odor Eater Insoles?
No, I never had that pleasure to sing the chorus with him.
Oh, he never approached you.
No.
All right.
I wouldn't have minded. I mean, I would have loved to do it, but never had that opportunity.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Fred, in 2009, the tag team of Crime Time hosted the WWE Divas Halloween Costume Contest. The participants were Natalya Neidhart as a Spanish matador, Layla as Queen of Pop, Michael Jackson, Michelle, Too Cool for School, McCoo, as the Devil's Advocate, and Mickey James as Miss Electra. Let's say you could travel back in time to 2009 and be in the ring and take place of one of the women's spots. Would it be Natalya Neidhart as a matador, Layla as Michelle Jackson, Michelle McCoo as the Devil's Advocate, or eventual winner, Mickey James as Miss Electra?
Probably Michelle McCoo as the Devil's Advocate.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
I think so, because being where Michelle McCoo is today, and the possibility of being in her shoes today would be interesting.
Oh, all right. I'm going to underline that your choice is a Devil's Advocate. Very interesting. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Avery, in 2005, Jerry the King Lawler hosted the Divas Halloween Costume Contest. The participants were Ashley as a Dark Angel, Marie as an Angel in White with Halo, Candice Michelle as a Dominatrix Catwoman, Mickey James dressed up as her role model and symbiotic partner Trish Stratus, Victoria was a baseball player, and Mickey James was Wonder Woman. If you could pick one of the local indie wrestlers in your area, which you live by and you have been following because of his or her potential, which one would you choose to play with time travel and take the place of Dominatrix Catwoman Candice Michelle?
Catwoman Candice Michelle.
Yes.
I actually trained a young lady named Aja, and I think I would take her.
Oh, okay.
Aja Peora. She's a up-and-coming, talented young wrestler that I trained a few years back, and I think I would pick her to take that spot.
Wow, all right. I'll mark that down in our logbook, okay? All right. Well, Fred, can you tell us if DDP Yoga has helped you lose weight? DDP.
You know, interesting question. Did you read my bio? Do I have a bio out there? Actually,
yes.
I lost 100 pounds. And DDP Yoga is part of the reason why. Yeah, I'm a big advocate of DDP Yoga. Another interesting story was back in the old days when we did our tapings at Center Stage, I had hurt my back, and I had gone to a chiropractor down in Florida. He gave me some exercises, and I was warming up before a match, and EVP came by and was talking to me then, and he had just, at that time, it was late 80s, early 90s, he had started to get into the yoga and stuff. It wasn't called DDP or anything like that. I don't even think he had that envisioned yet. But, you know, we talked about stretching and different exercise routines. But, yeah, I'm a big advocate of DDP yoga, and it definitely helped me lose the weight and it's helped me keep it off.
Wow, all right. Okay, very good. All right, well, I myself have my homework assignments. I'm going to look up both of those movies again and watch them, especially They Live and The Bubblegum Line. And I hope you get a chance to listen to Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah. I think I'm going to sit down and do that in a couple minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, it was great talking with you, and I'm going to turn it back over to Sun Guy now. Yes.
All right.
Thank you, QT. Now, Fred, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, and I was curious, coming into the interview today, how did you end up being billed from Boise, Idaho?
You know, I've got no idea. I have no idea. They just, at that time, we were doing a lot of tapings in the South. And, you know, Center Stage was the main area where we were taping in Atlanta, Georgia, for the 605 show on TBS. And then we would do the syndicated shows around there, that area, you know, Birmingham, Montgomery, Pensacola, Mobile, Jacksonville, you know, all the southern towns is basically where we were doing them all. And they just, they were using all the enhancement guys from the South, and they just wanted us to all pick different towns. And I had a running joke where somebody used to call me Fred the Potato Head. And Boise, Idaho, I think is like the home of potatoes or something, and so that's how it started. I've never been there. It's just, and I think if you go back later on, they moved me to Cheyenne, Wyoming. So they just picked another town for me to live in.
I believe also Iowa came into play.
Yeah, I think Iowa might have. I've always been a big fan of Iowa. I'm a, you know, being an amateur wrestler fan and coach. I like the Hawkeyes. So yeah, and I've got a good friend that lives up in Iowa, and used to wear a lot of Iowa T-shirts and stuff. So I think Iowa might have been one of the places I came from too.
If it helps out at all, there is a relatively new wrestling promotion in Boise, Idaho. First time wrestling has been in Boise in very, very long time. They've been around about a year. So if you ever want to go to one of your announced hometowns and wrestle, you do have an option there in Boise now.
Well, I might have to keep that in mind. I've never been to Idaho, so that I know of anyways.
Not a lot of wrestling there historically, but there is a full-time promotion in Boise right now. I work there myself.
Are they doing pretty good?
They're doing fairly well. They just had a series of shows yesterday at a funeral home to celebrate Halloween. They're raising a lot of money. They're attached to numerous charities and do a lot of benefit work to help out local causes in Boise. And the fan base is growing, so I think you'd enjoy Wrestle Club there in Idaho.
Huh, that's interesting. Sounds like a good deal.
Huh. Now, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about heading into this interview was oftentimes the stars that would be on TV were really thinking about themselves. They didn't always think about the match or their opponent. There's been stories told countless times about different incidents. Did you ever personally encounter a time when the people that were being pushed may have been a little bit reckless with guys like yourself that were out there to try to make them into the stars that they were?
Fortunately, I was usually bigger than most of the guys that were getting pushed. You know, there were a few. PM News was one of them that wanted to get himself over real big, and he wanted to just do whatever. Brian Pillman at times, like I said, I'm not a big fan of Brian Pillman. He would let his ego run rude a little times. But overall, I would have to say that most of the workers, they understand that if you take advantage of the guy that's trying to help you look good, that it's very easy for me to make you look bad. So, I mean, you know, you have to understand that it's both of us working together. And if I want to get you over, if you want me to get you over, you've got to protect me so I can do that. So I didn't run into a lot of problems with that. I know that there's a couple guys who, you know, Vader was a little stiff at times. The Road Warriors were a little stiff. The Steiners were a little stiff. But none of them were ever deliberately out there to hurt an enhancement guy or a job guy or anybody else for that matter to get themselves over, in my opinion.
Well, we have come down to the last few moments of the show. I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything and everything you have, social medias, any upcoming appearances, anything at all, floor is all yours.
Well, I appreciate it. I'd just like to thank you for allowing me to come on here and, you know, share a little nostalgia and talk with the fans and all. Twitter account, I think it's FredAvery1 at Twitter, if you want to contact me through there. I'm working with a group down here in the Florida area, Continental Championship Wrestling, based out of Jacksonville. If you're in this area, they put on some good shows in small towns like Yulee, Florida, Callahan, Florida. Good little promotion there. And if you get an opportunity, like I said, there's a female wrestler that I trained, Aja Peoria. Get a chance to see her. She's on tour now. I think she's going to Mexico. Good worker there. And just, you know, keep supporting the independent scene. I appreciate that.
Well, Fred Avery, it has been a pleasure having you on Turnbuckle Turmoil today. We want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us, and hopefully we'll get to do it again soon.
All right, man. I appreciate it, too. You have a good day.
All right, fans, if you get the chance, look up some Fred Avery footage on YouTube. Check him out. Always made the stars look very, very good. Also, a lot of great independent footage of him out there, so check it out. And we will be back with you next week.